We are helping men become better by living their purpose.
The minute I got a taste of it and the energy I felt in that room, I was 100% bought in.
Every man at one point is going to lose their edge. Okay, someone who protects, someone who provides, and somebody who's living a legacy.
Welcome to the Real Mentors Podcast, where we interview real examples who are altering lives. Today, it is my honor and privilege to have the one and only Raul Velasquez as my guest. Raul is the founder of the Edge 100 Challenge and actually a personal mentor of my own. So I am very, very excited to have him on today. Raul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. I appreciate you having me here.
I appreciate you making the time. So tell us a little bit about the Edge 100 Challenge for those that don't know.
I would like to start from the time that I lost my edge, because people ask me all the time, Raul, how did you end up doing what you're doing? How did you end up being a coach, a mentor, a speaker? And I said, I didn't sign up for this at the beginning. Like, I was just trying to help people, right? But what I did is I started sharing my experience when I lost my edge. The way I look at it, edge is the energy, the determination, the discipline to be guided to execute, right? And all of us at one point, we're gonna lose the edge. The older we get, right? The most likely it's gonna happen that we're gonna lose the edge. Some people call it the midlife crisis. I call it the rite of passage. Every man at one point is gonna lose their edge, and he just has to get around other people that will help him sharpen the edge.
And as they say in the Bible, iron sharpens iron. And I've been privileged enough to be around the group of men that you've put together. And I can't tell you enough. I can't say enough. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I'm always reluctant. And I told you the same thing when I first met you. I was like, I was a little reluctant. Yeah. You know, he comes off as this tough guy and fist pumping and I am the edge. And, you know, you got the accent. So it's easy to misconstrue the message that you're trying to get across. But the minute I got a taste of it and the energy I felt in that room, I was 100% bought in. I'm not only, I'm not only a spokesperson, I'm also a client. And I swear by, you know, what it is that you're doing. You are truly the real deal. You've decided to dedicate your life to making others better. So you've dedicated your life to helping other men find their edge. What was the thing, or what's the backstory that actually drove you to move from what I know to be the real estate market and industry, which you were doing well in, and just pivot to where you are now?
So it came to a point, Sean, that I stopped loving what I was doing. I remember I was excited about real estate. I ate and bred real estate. That was me. But it came to a point that I was just exhausted. I was burned out. I was making money. I was making deals. I had people working under me. But I just dreaded going to the office. I lost my passion. I lost my drive. And I started drinking. Started drinking every single night. Mainly because I had a stress pain. I don't know if you ever felt those stress pains in your gut. That's uncertainty. When you have uncertainty, you have those pains in your gut. That's a gut check. Right. But instead of addressing it, what I did is I try to numb it. I try to sedate it. I try to push it down, stuff it down, until I couldn't do it anymore. My wife, my son looked at me one day, and I saw the look of disappointment. I saw the look that my son had. He was 5 years old at that point. And I said, man, I got to get my shit together. This is not me. This is not what I'm about. I need to figure out what's wrong with me. So I went into a journey of trying to find, how do I get my passion back? How do I get my drive back? How do I get back into the man that I used to be? Because I had that edge at one point, but I lost it. At that moment, I spent about $500,000, similar story to what you've gone through, $500,000 all in, because when we do something, we go all in.
Yes,
like, we don't half-ass it, right? So went all in personal development, went all the way to India, learned meditation, learned all the NLP. I learned all these rituals, and I came back and like, man, I'm on fire, man. I got my edge back. There was a group of guys who asked me to come and speak in their event. It was a bunch of tech guys from Silicon Valley.
Okay.
So, Raul, I want you to come and speak about your real estate business, but also talk about the meditation that you do. Talk a little bit about your personal development. So I opened up with real estate. But then I ended up talking about personal development, talking about mindset, and every one of them was glued into that story. I said, forget about real estate, man.
Right.
Tell us, how are you able to get into that peak state and maintain it? I never thought about being a speaker. I never thought about teaching this, but they kept on pushing me. I said, man, you got to get your story out there. Long story short, they put me in the stage. It was my first stage. Like, it was like a month later, they had a big event, about 2,000 people. Put me in the stage. Said, Raul has a story for you to share. And just introduce Raul Velasquez. I come in and I share my ritual, my morning ritual.
Oh, wow.
No context whatsoever. Just I'm going to show you this process that I do every single day. And you know the ritual that I do.
Who is this weirdo coming up here?
Holy shit, man. It was 2,000 people. The energy was amazing. And that got hooked into sharing the story to be able to help people break through. So that was the intro of me being a speaker and a coach.
So you're doing real estate. You get this opportunity. Now, what's it look like after that? How do you go from realizing, hey, I'm onto something here. I've got a gift. I've got the tools. I can help people, but this is a comfortable living. What does that transition look like for you?
It wasn't easy. Right. It wasn't easy. And I tell you why, because we want to keep our frame of who we are. We want to keep our identity. Right. So my identity was I'm a real estate investor. I'm a real estate entrepreneur. I have no business being a coach, being a speaker. All this shit is foreign to me. Right. But I said to myself, if I don't take the chance to at least test this out, all right, to at least try it out and put it out there, I'm going to regret this the rest of my life. Right. So I made a commitment. I'm going to put one event, and I try to sabotage that event because I chose to put that event 2 weeks before Christmas, December 13, 2013.
Holiday party season for everybody.
And I said, you know what? If nobody comes, then I'm done, right? And I kept on calling my network, and I sent a bunch of emails and texts. And all of a sudden, I'm getting, yeah, man, I'm in. Oh, I love Vegas. I'm going to be in Vegas. So I had about 100 people that said, I'm in, without any marketing, without any, like, I just said, we're going to go to Vegas. We're going to have a breakthrough event for 3 days. Yeah, I'm in. So I said, well, now I have to get speakers because I'm not a speaker. I'm just putting this together. So I called up a couple of speakers. I'm like, you know, Raul, I don't know you, but something tells me that I need to be there. And they committed.
Wow.
So I went to a fundraiser here in New York, and I met a guy, I don't know if you know who Eckhart Tolle is.
Of course.
The book, Power The Power of Now. So he was working with Eckhart Tolle, and they were raising money for his movie that he was putting together. So everybody in that event was in that holistic environment, right? I was the only one with a suit on and a tie. It's a fundraiser. I'm a real estate. So I'm thinking I'm going to be around, you know, money guys.
You're networking.
So I was looking around like, man, what am I doing here? I'm the only guy with a suit. The guy saw me from the stage and said, hey, I need to talk to this guy. So at the end, put me aside, talk to me. I figure he wants my money. He said, something about you tells me you're going to do big things, he said. I said, what's your next move? And I just told him, I'm putting an event together in Vegas. I have 3 days breakthrough. He says, you know what? I'm in. I was like, this guy's working with a control. He has, like, he doesn't know me for anything. He didn't ask me for money. He didn't ask me to get paid. He just said, I want to support you because I see something in you. So now I have to come through. I just don't have my network. Now I have this big Hollywood producer working with a control coming to my first event. And then that event was what changed everything, because that event gave me the taste of what breakthrough is, because I had my biggest breakthrough at that event.
And what was that, if you don't mind sharing?
You know, you and I are big Tony Robbins students, right? So I was with Tony for about 5 years before that. And the first day, I did my best impression of Tony Robbins, because that's what I knew, man. And everybody came to tell me, man, you're the Latin Tony, Raul. We love your energy. We love, you know, what you do. And at a certain point, I probably would have been proud, but this time I felt like a fraud.
Right.
It's like, fuck, man, this is not me. I'm trying to be somebody because I think that's what they want from me, right? The next day, got on the stage, and I shared my truth. I said, listen, this is not me. This is not who I am. I'm trying to be somebody that I'm not. Let me tell you why I'm here. And I just started telling my story of drinking every single day, the pain that I had, the journey that I went through. And I think I was crying in the stage with about 100 people that were crying too. Like, I didn't have any video guy. I wish I had video of that event. But that was the moment that people said, you know what? This is what we want to hear. Being authentic, being real, and this is why we're here. We're here to learn from your breakthrough. You don't have to be anybody else. You just have to be you.
Right.
And that's when I said, fuck, man, I don't know if I could be me. I don't know if this is like, I don't know if I have the intensity to share my story. Because I did it one time. Imagine doing it again and again and again. That's when I said a prayer, and I heard God said, this is your calling. If you don't take advantage of this, if you don't do this now, you're never going to hear the voice of purpose again. So I committed to do another event in Vegas 4 months later.
Wow.
And this time, I didn't have 3 or 4 speakers. I had like 15 speakers. Because now this time, I'm hiding from sharing my story, right? And one of my good friends pulled me over. He's a speaker as well. He said, Raul, if you don't share your story, none of this is going to matter. Like, we know what you're doing. You're putting everybody in the stage. You should be in the stage. So then I got in the stage and I shared my story, the same effect. Same effect. The power of being real and raw is captivating for the audience. So my third event, I put in New York, came back home. This time I said, no speakers, just me. It was my wife and I for 3 days. So the first day we got there and we saw a line of people. I said, fuck, man, this works, man. This marketing works, right? But the line of people were not for me. There was another speaker next door, right? It was a shorter line from me.
It was the conference room.
It was another conference. But when we got there, it was 3 days of going through breakthrough after breakthrough after breakthrough. And that's when I realized, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. This is my calling. I just have to structure to see how I'm going to make it into a business, because the first three events were just tests to see what my message was, who my clients were, and what do I need to do in order for me to push the envelope. I like to work with people like me. My market is men like me that lost the edge. So the first three events were not for men only. The first three events was for anybody who wanted to come to have a breakthrough. After that, I started doing boot camps, and I went in a different route. I went small, and I went niche, and I started actually doing things at my house. I brought in like 5-6 guys at a time, breakthrough style, boot camp style. I mean, that was the hardest and the most fulfilling at the same time, because I was able to see the change and feel the shift as it was happening, as opposed to having a big event, a big room when you think you have making an impact, but you may not know if you're making an impact.
Well, I can attest to that as a platinum partner with Tony, and having some amazing events, amazing experiences, 6 days, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day sometimes. And, you know, we always tease each other. This ain't going to be any Tony Robbins shit, no jumping around, happy-go-lucky. And, you know, I affectionately told you, you don't have to compare yourself to Tony. There's only one Raul Velasquez, and I truly mean it, because I had the pleasure of experiencing your boot camp. And, you know, I remember Andy and I getting pulled out of the crowd of 100 guys, and they're like, Andrew, Sean, these fucking guys signed up. They don't even know what they're getting into. But that was faith based on Yarick's recommendation. Yeah. Because when you get in a circle of men that you trust, you take their advice and you move forward. So that boot camp experience was one of the most, if not most powerful event that I've ever been to because of the intimacy of it. You can do some damage in a large room. Don't get me wrong. But what is the difference between the large format events that you do and the small format events like the boot camp?
See, Sean, guys like you and I, we could manipulate and we could lie and we could hide, especially in a big room. So that's why it took me such a long time for me to have breakthroughs, because even though I was in a big room, an intimate room sometimes with Tony, I was hiding myself because I wasn't ready or wasn't willing to tell the truth. Now, when you have a bunch of guys, 10, 12 guys in a room, you can't fucking hide. Right. That's when I realized if I could help this man stop hiding, because I wish somebody would have pulled me aside, and it would have saved me time, money, and opportunities. So that's why for me, this is like the best experience. Why? Because you're not going to be able to hide. Like I said, this is not a Tony Robbins event. We're going to get lost or hide.
Right. Well, you can't fucking hide. Thousands of people
you can't
room,
fucking right. hide. And from that moment that we see it, we're peeling the onion and we're digging deeper and we're going deep. The version of me that shows up at this bootcamp is the version that doesn't give a fuck whether you like me, whether you love me, whether you hate me, because my intention at that moment is to break through all the bullshit that you have to be able to help you have the breakthrough that you need, to be able to see that you are the one in control of your pain, and you could take that pain and turn it into fuel.
You mentioned hiding, and in the context of you're able to hide in a room just by not raising your hand, nobody's going to call on you, right? So who's the wiser? What are some of the things that you do and the program does to not pull out, because you can't pull anything out of somebody who's not willing to share, but what are some of the things that you do or that you've learned over the years that helps get somebody in a space where they're comfortable enough to share or at least have the courage to identify the things they're hiding from? Because we're all hiding.
Yeah.
Some 100%. Of us more than others.
100%.
There's truths that we don't want the world to know about us. You have a gift of getting guys in a room and getting that shit out of them. And I can, you know, obviously tell you that I've shared my story. The freest guy in the room is the guy with no secrets.
Yep.
How do you aim to get people to that point?
You came to a leadership at the end of the day one, if I remember correctly. You came to me and said, Raul, like, I feel your realness. I feel like now I know, like I'm in. You know, without even us knowing each other, because we all have that perception, like, what's this guy gonna fucking teach me? What's this guy gonna tell me? What's this guy gonna sell me, right? My strategy is always coming from a place of like, I am you. I'm no better than you. I don't feel like I'm on top. I am you. I'm just a reflection of you. So the moment that you're able to see yourself in me, you realize there's no judgment. I'm not here to judge you. I don't give a shit what you've done or where you've been, because I've been there or worse. Right. So when you have another mirror, then you have the trust to actually see your reflection. And that's where I think more men need to be around men who don't judge them, but hold the space for them to see themselves. So that's the first step. I have to become the mirror. So if I want to have people be real, I have to be real first. That's the hardest thing for me, because at the beginning it was easy for me to be real because my pain was fresh. Right. Now, I've been doing this for 10 years. I have to take myself back into those places where I had a lot of pain. So now my pain is different. My pain doesn't come from the struggles that I've been to. My pain comes from, fuck, what if I don't keep pushing? What if, you know, if I don't continue to drive my marketing, my messaging, I miss the guy that could have listened to my message. That just because I was sitting on my ass, I was complaining or I was in my fucking head, a guy missed out or listening to a video, listening to a podcast, listening to a Daily Edge, and now they're no longer with us. That's what I tell my team, my sales team, this is life and death. We're not selling coaching. We're not selling breakthroughs. We are helping men become better by living their purpose. What's at risk? Their family, their kids, their wives, their employees, their customers. So I always tell you, every single man that I coach is worth 10,000 lives. So I'm not looking for one guy to help. I'm looking to help 10,000 lives through that one man. So when they understand that framework, when they come into the room, like, shit, she's about to get real. Like, Raul is not judging us. He's no better than us. I'm just here to hold the mirror. Now, you have to have the courage to look at the mirror and say, fuck, this is what I'm seeing. But then there's another side of, like, what's the possibility? So that's why I have the guys wear the same shirt, right? Because there's no comparison game. You come in the room, everybody's wearing the same shirt. Okay, shit, okay, you have a business, we have a business. Okay, you might be more successful than me, but at the end, we're all the same. Right. When you have that frame, they give themselves the permission to put their guard down, and the game changes.
For those that don't know, ego and insecurity are the same thing, right? We act in a manner that we want attention because we feel that we have shortcomings that need to be made up for. And you mentioned something about being equal. And I thought that was fascinating because guys that have accomplished some level of success, particularly financial, have a hard time taking advice from people that aren't on the same financial level as them. And I've seen you do this with numerous guys in the brotherhood, which is they're financially more successful than you, but you've been able to dig deep and get these guys to realize that they ain't shit. All your money is for nothing, because there's this whole other side of you that you are just being reckless. Your family is suffering, and you have a beautiful line which says, correct me if I'm wrong, who's going to suffer the most if I don't step up and become the man that I can be? First and foremost is going to be, you know, my family's going to come to mind. But basically everybody around you becomes collateral damage. When you're showing up hungover, when you're showing up out of shape, when you're showing up not being your best self, quite frankly, you're not doing anybody any service. So I've seen you be able to level up men that on paper are doing better than you.
Yeah.
What has given you that confidence to know you have that?
Is looking at a man from a multi-dimensional perspective. A man is not just his business. That's just one dimension. You could say that you have a big business. You could have a big business. You have all the money in the world, right? But that's just one dimension. Show me who you are in with your family. That's another dimension. Your being. Your spiritual connection, that's another dimension. Your body, that's another dimension. So what I measure on is the integration. If you are badass in your business, are you being a badass with your wife and your kids? Are you being connected with God? Are you taking care of yourself? And most of us, we're looking for balance. But balance doesn't exist. It's all about integration. So what I'm able to do is I'm able to help them see that their business is also another way to hide. The reason that you're overweight is because you're hiding, thinking, well, I'm going to get my shit together, my business, then I'm going to take care of myself. You know how I know that? Because that was me. In my 30s, I didn't work out. I didn't go to the gym. I used to make fun of the guys who were at the gym. Say, well, look at this broke motherfuckers in the gym, man.
They got nothing better to do.
I don't give a shit. I want to be a billionaire, and then I'm going to be able to afford, you know, to work out. So that was my mentality, which is fucking crazy, right? And then if you look good, how is your marriage? Are you taking care of your wife? Are you taking care of your kids? Do you have passion in your relationship? So I'm able to bring them to a place when they realize that if I'm measuring my success based on only one dimension, I'm fucked up. Right. And we all are fucked up at one point. The key is, how can I integrate everything so I could live with purpose? Because that's what the edge is. The edge is purpose. Right. The edge is having that energy to be able to not just succeed in your health, but also have a reflection and impact on the community through your business, through your marriage, and be an example, being a leader.
I know that with the marriage component, it was a big thing for me, because when you go out and you start educating yourself and you're doing the self-development, it's like people that get religion. All of a sudden, they want to share it with the world, yeah, and they expect that everybody else is going to be in that belief system. And for me personally, it was with my wife and in my marriage. And one of the beautiful things I learned working with Coach Christian and your team was hold the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're on your own journey. She's on her own journey. Hold the space. Be the best you. Show up as the best you. Put in the work that you can. Don't hope to control the outcome. And the rest will work itself out. And that's, you know, the long story short. But what I've noticed is when I take that advice and I don't expect anything from my significant other and I just decide that I'm going to light up a room based on everything I'm doing, they automatically come along for the ride. Now, your kids were young when you had this aha moment and you were able to better yourself. How did the process look at home, where you go from, you know, 0 to 60 in the self-development world, you're spending six figures, you're fucking traveling the world, you're learning all this information. How did you bring that back home? How did that affect your, you know, your relationship with your wife and your kids at the time?
So I wish I would tell you that my wife was on board. She was like, oh, awesome. The king is back. We're going to go to the next level. No, she was like, I don't give a fuck, right? This is your journey. I'm not in the journey with you. This is, you know, you're fucked up. I'm perfect, right? Yeah. That woman always think that we're the problem, right?
Bill Burr, funny story. He goes, yeah, men are like this building with scaffolding around it for 40 fucking years. We're always working on me.
Yeah.
And she's fucking perfectly fine.
Yeah. So I will tell you, I didn't expect her to change, but I did want her to be my cheerleader. But when she wasn't my cheerleader, that was when we got tested. So I believe now men are being tested more and more because the culture is empowering women. If we have like the past decade or more, yeah, of woman empowerment, right?
Decades,
and,
yeah.
And then now we have men like in the back burner. Like, who's empowering men? Like, no, you should be good. You need to be empowered. Right. So that's when I see the shift. Less men started to take care of themselves. More women started to take care of themselves. So there was a disbalance between the masculine and the feminine energy. You're a very masculine man in your business. You get shit done. You come home and you become a pleaser.
Right.
And the pleaser says, you know what, honey, whatever you want. Because I don't have the bandwidth. I've been slaying dragons all day long in the office. I just want to give you whatever you want. Just leave me alone. Right. So now here comes Raul, got his edge back. And my wife is so used to me being the pleaser that we had resistance. So we had to go through a journey of, hey, this is not me anymore. Like, this is a version of me who I'm not going to tolerate certain things. I'm not here to be a pleaser. I'm here to please you. Complete different framework. Women want to be pleased. They don't want a pleaser, because the moment that you become a pleaser, there's no polarity.
Right.
They're actually no longer attracted to you. So that's what happened with my wife and I. We were no longer attracted to each other. So it came to a point like we didn't want to get divorced, but we were not having sex. We didn't want to be around each other because there was two masculine energies around until she shifted to become feminine. And now we're celebrating 25 years anniversary. And it's because she also did the work and she was allowing herself to surrender to the masculine. And I tapped into the version of me who's not using the masculine to destroy, but is using the masculine to create. Because a woman can only surrender to a man that they could trust. And a man has to have something to trust in. So I trust in God. So I surrender to God. So therefore, my wife also surrenders to my masculinity because I'm serving a higher purpose.
And for any of our listeners that are not exactly understanding what Raul is trying to explain in terms of polarity, you know, however framework you want to live in, That's your choice. We're in society. We don't throw stones. You know, we throw insults now, right? So ever since man has moved from its primal form to civilized form, there's this shift in the roles that we play, right? Whereas we were the hunter-gatherers and women were the homemakers. Now that those roles can be anything. There's no clear definition.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But I think what we're seeing is a little bit of the fallout of going too far in one direction. You know, there are men, there are women, there are energies that each brings to a relationship and to a home and to a family. And I was ignorant to a lot of it because I didn't see it growing up. And I've shared with you being raised by a single mom, being around aunts and my mother's friends, and not having a lot of male energy or lessons being taught to me. There was, I mean, I want to say it's been 10 or 15 years of me trying to figure out what a man is and then what a successful marriage looks like. And just to anybody out there who's suffering in their relationship, who's thinking about pulling the plug, just ask yourself one question. Have you invested time, energy, and money in your ability to address the problem and fix it? Address it honestly. I think so many people are willing to spend money on stuff. And then let's say you graduate from stuff and then you spend money and invest in yourself. But maybe it's for your business or for your social media or for something that's going to get you some financial return. Have you actually took the time to read, brush up, and invest in your relationships? I think it's the most often overlooked component to having that balance and that stability.
And one of the things that agreements that we have with my wife now is that whenever I forget who I am, she helps me remember. And whenever she forgets who she is, I help her remember. If we both forget who we are, we're fucked, right?
Now, how does that look?
So how it looks is that sometimes we act in a certain way. I know she has to do is anchor me, pull me back into, like, this is not who you are. Right. Like, give you an example. My daughter recently got a tattoo. She's 17 years old, all right? And she got a tattoo. I'm like, fuck, like, where is it? How big is it? And then my wife already warned me or preempted me for the conversation what was going to happen. And the old version of me would have fucking tear shit down. Like, she's grounded. She's this and that. Like, but then she pulled me towards, like, who are you? Like, this is, you are a leader. Lead her, not judge her. So we had a great conversation. My daughter and I, we had about a 2-hour conversation. She understood what I understood her. She understood me. Obviously, there's consequences, she's punished, but it didn't have to. We didn't have to tear our relationship down.
Right.
It was a beautiful message. She has a small tattoo behind her ear that says "beautiful soul," and that's what I used to call her. I used to tell her, "You're a beautiful soul. You're a beautiful soul." So that I just wanted something to remind me that I'm a beautiful when I looked myself in the mirror. So,
teenage girls, if you're gonna get a tattoo before you're 18, make sure it's something that your dad's gonna
that's
be like.
That's it. It's a little bit of a leverage. So. But
brilliant.
But at the end, after the conversation, we got an opportunity to connect. And I look back like, shit, like, if this would have happened 10 years ago, it would have destroyed a relationship because I would have felt betrayed. She would have felt judged. So helping my wife helps me remember where am I going as opposed to where I've been. And when she loses her shit too, I also help her remember, you're the queen. So she helps me remember that I'm a king, and I help her remember that she's the queen, and we make king and queen decisions versus warrior, or worse, dark warrior fucking decisions to burn shit to the ground.
Now, you touched on the term dark warrior, and I'm familiar with that term. One of the things that I like about the program, and which I believe is unique to you, is that it's not all sunshine and rainbows. You actually encourage us and the members to tap into what is your dark warrior. Tell the audience, what is your dark warrior?
We all have a shadow side, right? And even in the Bible, it talks about saint and sinner, right? And I believe that the reason most men are not satisfied or fulfilled in their lives is because they don't know how to handle their darkness. It's guilt, and shame, mistakes, failures. What we try to do is we try to stuff it in the fucking bottom, right? And usually money, sex, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is that we could find to stuff it. When I started doing the work and bringing up my darkness, not being ashamed of it, I started using it to tap into my light, and the game changed. Because now I'm no longer afraid of my dark warrior. I use my dark warrior to actually execute at a higher level. And we all have that version of us that, like, man, if something walks into the door that wants to attack you, you're going to turn to the dark world. You're going to defend yourself, right? Or you're going to defend your family. But what happens with society is that, no, that's wrong. You shouldn't be that way. You have to talk it out. You have to be civilized. I want men to tap into the dark warrior for good, as opposed to allowing the dark warrior to show up when you're unconscious, when you're drinking, when you're probably doing shit that you shouldn't be doing, and then it gets triggered, and then you get in trouble. So by using what I call emotional fitness, you're able to tap into the versions of you, the dark warrior, the king, because there's also a peasant. The peasant side of us is the victim. It's the one that's constantly blaming everyone else, constantly complaining, constantly saying, shit, I wish I could have, would have, but didn't. So that peasant doesn't serve you. So you have to be aware of when is he showing up, when is the dark warrior showing up, and when is the king going to show up.
Yeah, I think the peasant is what we're seeing in society today.
100%.
Times are 100%. So comfortable. People are just wanting to have the world bend to their needs as opposed to rising to the occasion or growing stronger so that they can become, you know, better members of society. It's like, no, let's lower the standards so I don't have to work as hard and I can fit in better.
And that's what we've seen with the youth, right? The families have raised the kids to just be entitled and have a peasant mentality. I'll give you a quick story with my son. First job that he has outside of working with me, he goes to work at a grocery store, right? The country market. And first day, he comes in disappointed. I say, hey, what happened? He's like, Dad, I don't know if they like me there. I said, what? Tell me about how was your day? You know, I go in, I didn't even know my name. He's like, who are you? I was like, oh, I'm the new kid. I said, well, here's a broom. You know, go to the bathrooms and clean the bathroom. It's like, all right. So I clean the bathroom and they just treated me like shit, Dad. Like, I don't think they know who I am. And I said to him, like, what do you mean they know who you are? This is your first day on the job. You're starting at the bottom, not just because you're my son or the son. Oh, yeah, Raul came. Oh, yeah, let me give him the manager position. No, you have to start at the bottom. You have to bring value to the market, because here's what, in our household, you're the best son. We love you. You can't do no wrong. Outside, the world doesn't give a shit about you unless you bring value. Right. So now you have a taste of what the real world is. So now you have two choices. You either quit, don't go to work, and hope that one day somebody's going to see your value, or you bring value and you prove people that you have value. Now he's a year and a half in the same job and they love him and he's, you know, he's thriving. But see, if I was in another parent, said, oh, they treat my son bad, let me speak to the manager. Yeah. Let me go and say, what's wrong with you? No, you got to let this kid fail. You got to get this kid to experience pain, because through pain, they're going to grow and they're going to expand.
And we both come from humble beginnings. I know your story, and you immigrated here to the United States, and your journey was fucking crazy one in order to get here and be reunited with your family. So that gave you a lot of the pain or the backstory to draw from. But now you're a successful business person and you're a successful parent. And I had the pleasure of meeting your son, and he strikes me as a very good kid in a couple of occasions that we've met. You talked about the struggle between giving them a level of responsibility, but also a level of comfort, because you don't want them to struggle with the same thing. Yeah. I'm now struggling with the same. My kids are younger than yours. And it's a point of contention for me. How do I raise these kids to not be pussies? And I don't pull my punches on the word, because I think a lot of the kids today are pussies and they're soft. And, you know, bullying is a thing. And I'm not saying bullying is right, but the other day, you know, we were made aware that my daughter's probably getting bullied by a couple of the boys in day camp. And my wife and I had a solid conversation, and we both agreed that we were not going to do a damn thing about it. And the reason being is because what lesson is she going to learn? 100%. The world is full 100%. Of bullies, and you've got to learn to fend them off. And you can't give them, you know, value over how you feel about yourself. That's our role as parents. So how do you navigate the world of coming from very little to nothing, having everything you need, and kids that are entitled? What are some of the things you do to prevent that with, you know, two young adult kids?
So we did this at the beginning. We had a conversation that my son came to me one day and says, Dad, what's my allowance? I said, what are you talking about? You know, Johnny over here, he gets like 20 bucks a week. You know, my other friend gets about 50, so I want to negotiate my allowance. I said, well, I'm allowing you to live in the house, okay? That's your allowance, all right? I'm allowing you to be here. I said, but you're talking about you want to make some money, right? He was about 80 years old. I said, in here, you have to earn your money. So you want an iPhone, you have to earn it. You want this, you have to earn it. So don't ever ask me for anything unless you have a plan of how are you going to bring value to earn it. We had that conversation with my daughter and my son. And we always have, we want an iPhone, we have a contract. How are they going to pay for it on a monthly basis? What are they going to do for it? So everything is currency, right? So we have that established. So if you can talk to my kids, they'll tell you, my dad never gave us money. He's never. We always have to work for our money. So they'll always tell you, they always expand the stories, how bad it was. Just like we do it. I used to go to school with no shoes. I used to, you know, work in the snow. So they do the same thing. So that's the first thing that we did. Now, as they get older, we start seeing through my stories of being bullied, because I got bullied when I came here. I was an immigrant, 11 years old. I didn't know how to speak English. Only thing I knew how to say was yes. This kid comes from another class. He says something, said yes. So everybody after a while congratulated me. Oh, awesome, awesome. So I thought everybody wanted to be my friend. So I said yes to everything. Came to find out, that kid asked me, do you think you could beat me up? I said, yes. Okay, I see you after school, motherfucker. So the first day I get into a fight with the kid in school, the toughest kid in school, that was my Welcome to America committee, right? So I got bullied from a very young age, and I was telling my stories, and I said, that experience made me who I am. Because right. My parents didn't speak English either. They couldn't go to the school to complain because they didn't know how to communicate. Right. So I had to figure it out at an early age how to defend myself, how to navigate certain situations, how to be street smart. Now my kids, they're in private school. They don't have the luxury of being, you know, in those situations. But now I'm the bully at home. No, I tell them, I'm going to be your bully. So I'm constantly picking on them, making them tough in order for them to. If you can't take your dad giving you some shit, how are you going to take the world giving you some shit? I love you. I'm telling you this because I love you. You can't take that type of attitude of being a complainer. So now my son, he's in college, 2 years. And the best thing that I've seen with him is how I've helped him build his confidence. He doesn't give a shit what people say about him. He doesn't give a shit. Like sometimes I say, listen, fix your hair, man. Like, you're going to go outside. Like, at least that's get it from me. I never go out without looking good with my hair. Like, dad, I don't give a shit. I don't care what people think. Like, man, like, you know, the girls are going to see you. Like, man, if the girls like me, they don't. I don't give a shit.
I like but the confidence.
He has that kind of confidence. And then now that serves him in every area because he knows who he is and what he stands for. My daughter also was getting bullied, and she used that to lose weight, to be at the gym. So now I'm stepping away. I'm letting them handle their bully situation. Like, I can't be a parent who's trying to protect them over everything. I got to let them fail. I have to let them go through the pain because it's going to make them stronger.
It's ironic you said that about your daughter because the weight thing, I didn't want to share it. But you know what? This is about it being authentic and being truthful. And I don't think there's any value in holding back punches. So thank you for sharing that because my daughter's 7 and she's overweight. And I think that's what the point of the bullying was because she's been eating a little less. And my wife and I, again, we made a point. We're like, listen, we've told her repeatedly and we've tried. And, you know, she likes to eat. Shit, I'm a big boy all my life. I like to eat too. Food is great. But when you have that outside pain feel bad, it's a motivator. Yep. And I think that motivators like that are good. You know, when I was a kid in high school, we had the dozens or snap. We would snap on each other. So the guys fucking just talk shit. And you fat fuck, you got titties like a girl, your feet, your bunions, your pimples, whatever. It was all fair game. But what that did was allow me to grow thick skin.
Yeah.
Because I was fat. And if you can't make me feel bad about being fat, then I'm good. Yeah. So I learned to laugh at myself and make jokes about myself. But this is the Real Mentors podcast. And obviously you're a mentor to your children. And to me, who were some of your early mentors? And, you know, what are some of the lessons you learned from them?
I was just having this conversation with my son and Yarek up in Italy. Like who we look up to like growing up, right? For me was my dad and my grandfather. And I tell you what, my dad got diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 19 years old. We knew that something was wrong with him. We didn't know what it was. We thought it was because he fell. He had an accident in his back. So he started losing his stability. He started falling a lot. We took him to a doctor. They did some tests. They came back to me. Says, we have to translate this to your dad. He has muscular dystrophy. It's a disease that eats up your muscles. He's going to get weaker. Eventually, he's going to end up in a wheelchair. And he's going to die young. Imagine, at 19 years old, having to translate this to my dad. You know what my dad said? Man, this gringos don't know anything, man. Like, he just goes back to work, right? So he had that mentality, like, hey, you're not going to tell me, like, what's wrong with me. I'm going to live my life. Eventually, he ended up being in a wheelchair for 20 years before he passed away. But he never complained. Every time I had a bad day, Sean, like, I would just call my dad. All he had to do was pick up the phone. Because I knew that whatever I was going through that moment was nowhere near what he was going through at that moment. So that gave me perspective that shit could be worse. So my father told me how to be grateful even in the worst of the moments. Then my grandfather, he told me discipline. I was in military school since I was 5 years old. Kindergarten. Imagine, in kindergarten in Ecuador, they put you in military school. So I'm there making a line like a soldier from kindergarten to third grade. I was in military school. So he told me discipline. Every day he woke up, he had a ritual. He had a stretching routine. And he passed away. He was 9 years old. And every single morning, he did the same thing. Because he went to the military, so he showed me discipline. So for me, I was looking at those two role models as, hey, one showed me discipline, the other one showed me perspective. Man, I have those two lessons. That's the legacy. That's the legacy. I could do anything now.
Wow. So Edge 100 Challenge and just the Edge program itself, you talked about balance and, you know, you live by the concept of the four B's. Explain to the audience what that is and how they might be able to implement that in their own day-to-day lives.
When I said to you that most men fail because they're looking for balance, right? And there is no such thing as balance. Balance doesn't exist. I believe there is such thing as integration, right? But the integration comes in the four dimensions: your body, which is your health, your being, your spiritual connection with your purpose, with God or the universe, your business, your ability to produce money, to have a career, to build a business, and your bonds, which is your relationships. That's the four B's: body, being, business, and bonds. And every single day you have to touch in those areas. It's not just one day or let me just wait till the weekend. No, every single day you have to do something to move the needle forward. So I created a game called the Base Hits. Every single day you do something for your body, you give yourself a point. Every single day you do something for your being, you give yourself a point. Every single time you do something for your business, you give yourself a point. Every single time you do something for your bonds, you give yourself a point. Then I have the other three habits. I call this the habits of a king. Is having a daily ritual, having accountability, and a king's code. So those seven habits with the four B's give you the integration to be able to perform at a higher level. For me, keeping track and measuring this on a daily basis gives me certainty. The moment that a man has certainty, no, he doesn't feel like he's burning out. He doesn't feel like, oh, fuck, man, I should have done more. No, you did your base hits. You did enough to move the needle forward. So the problem is that we beat ourselves up so much that we start losing certainty. And then we start living on regret. And then we have shame and guilt. And see, those energies are poison for our souls. I'd rather focus on progress. I'd rather focus on moving the needle forward. And most important, measuring how far I've come. That's why we developed an app. And you guys could download the app. Everybody who's listening to this, the edge100app.com. You go down, download the app. It's 30 days trial free. That app will allow you to measure your four B's by having seven habits that will help you sharpen your edge.
Yeah, it's a tool that we use every day, and I'm on a team that came out of the boot camp program, and it is definitely an accountability to making sure you're doing your daily non-negotiables, and also just checking in, and you're being part of a team, so you know people are relying on you to check in, and we have a competition. So I love the competitive, playful nature of the program as a whole. We set 100-day goals because that it gives us a time frame to measure against. For instance, I want to say we're probably a few weeks into my 100-day challenge. I've got a bunch of lofty goals I've got to accomplish by the next leadership summit. And if I don't obtain, if I don't attain 80% of them, you heard it here first, I got to shave my head off to the white meat. So I'm going to be motivated to make sure my ass shows up. 100%. And again, that was a consequence I set for myself because it was such a drastic consequence. There's no way I want to shave this beautiful head of hair off. So I'm going to make sure my ass shows up and does what I have to do. Tell the audience about the Edge. Tell them about the Edge 100 Challenge. And more importantly, you've got a leadership summit coming right here to the New York City metropolitan area, White Plains, New York, Tell us all about it.
Man, I am so excited about this event because it's right before the election, right before shit hits the fan. I mean, the economy right now, as we're experiencing, is going through a turmoil. The world needs certainty. Men need to lead again. You can't wait for the president to save you. You can't wait for the government to save you. You have to figure out what your next move is. You have to figure out what you're going to do. And it all comes down to being a leader. So nothing like having men come around, come together to really have the conversations of what I'm going to do to close the year strong. What I'm going to do in the next 12 months. How am I going to show up in my business, with my family? And most important, how can I become a better leader? I think leadership is the most important aspect that every single man needs to work on. Leadership is it, right now with the new, with technology, with AI, you're going to be able to do more in 1 year than people used to do in decades. Yeah. And it's just getting started. I just recently hired somebody to build an AI bot for my sales team. My average sales guy does 200-300 sales calls a day. You know how many calls the AI could do?
Countless.
1,000 at a time, okay? Wow. 1,000 at a time. So, and when you talk to this AI, it's like talking to you and I. And it's just the beginning. So next year, it's gonna you can't even understand how AI is changing the game. So we need to, we're gonna have a lot of conversations about AI. Leadership, now the skills of persuasion, the skills of influence, and even using communications to influence, you have to become a better communicator, you have to become a better influencer. Most important, you have to know why you do the shit that you do. What's your purpose? I'm gonna dig deep and drill down the framework for men to live with purpose, to find the certainty, and to start leading with power.
If you're a man who finds any interest in what Raul and I have been talking about today, make sure to check it out online. Where can they find you on your social media, website? Give us all the beans, and then let us know the dates for the upcoming Leadership Summit.
My handles are Raul The Edge. Raul The Edge is very simple. The event is October 28, 29.
Okay.
It's in Westchester, New York. We max it out to 200 men, so they do have to apply. It's an application process. We just want application process. Why? Because we want to make sure that you're the right type of guy. We're not looking for guys who are trying to sell us something or trying to get something from us. We're looking for community. We're building a brotherhood. You're part of a brotherhood. We're here building men to become better leaders. So we're going to protect the community to make sure that the right type of people come. So just go there. Just apply a couple of questions. You get in a call with my team. My team just, you know, make sure that, you know, you're looking to improve yourself, and then we'll get you registered.
Awesome. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that there's an understanding of leadership within me now that I didn't have before joining the program. And you identified it as something that was familiar to me, but I didn't see myself as that. But it's the reluctant leader. And, you know, I've always known I had these natural talents and these natural skills and the ability to connect with people and leadership ability, because I've had people tell me over the years, you give great advice, or thanks for that, or thanks for this. Or, hey, 10 years ago, I just had a buddy who, you know, went through some stuff with his wife and they're getting a divorce. And he goes, man, I should have listened to you. And I said, what the fuck are you talking about? And he goes, man, you told me 12 years ago, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was about something that had happened between him and his then girlfriend, who then became his wife. And he's like, if I would have listened to you, I would have saved a lot of money on divorce and therapy or whatever. And, you know, we chuckled, but it spoke to my ability to kind of see things from a bird's eye view. And I also realized, working with you, that I am a fucking leader. I was just scared to be one. And I think there's so many men out 100%. There in the world that have the ability to be leaders, but are just afraid to step into it because they don't know what that entails. I'm a family guy now, first and foremost. Anybody follows me on Instagram, they're like, does this motherfucker work? He's always with his family. And the reality is, because I designed this person to be a family guy. And now I'm designing this family guy to be a leader.
Yeah, 100%.
Not only of the family, but of the world as a whole. And just like you, one man can impact 10,000. People don't understand the ripple effect of change and impact and dedicating your life to something greater than yourself. So, great conversation, great program. I implore everybody to go check it out. I just want to leave asking you one question, because I love this and I want the audience to hear it. What does the next 10 years look like for Raul and the Edge program?
Madison Square Garden, brother. Madison Square Garden, 10,000 men. You have to understand, what you said is very profound, is most men don't see themselves as leaders. I didn't see myself as a leader. I fought this version of me. I wanted to stay comfortable. I wanted to stay just in my bubble, you know, just in the real estate industry that I was in. You have to break through that bubble. I believe God is calling men right now to step outside their comfort zone, to allow themselves to be guided, because that's what you did. You said, God, you put me here for a reason. You brought me to this crazy motherfuckers event for a reason. Like, I don't, you know, I'm going by faith. But see, that's why what we do is a calling. That's why the marketing, even people say, man, you're a great marketer. Well, no, I'm not. God is putting you. If you're listening to this, it's no coincidence. Like, God is working right now. This might be the prayer that you've been asking for, the answer for the prayer, because you are a fucking leader. If you listen to this, where's the camera? Right here. You are a fucking leader. If you're a man and you want to lead, it's up to you to get around other leaders to help you remember who the fuck you are. Because that's what people have done for me. That's what I'm committed to do for you. Any man that comes in my sphere of influence, I want them to know that they matter, that you are enough, you're not broken. All you need to do is be around some crazy motherfuckers that will help you sharpen your edge.
Amen to that. Big catchphrase these days with the younger generation or the hood is, you know, King. What up, King? You know what I'm saying? Stay toxic, King, as like a play on that. And I think we use that word, but we really don't understand what a king is. Let's wrap it up there, if you don't mind. What's your definition of a king?
A king is somebody who protects, someone who provides, and somebody who's leaving a legacy. A king doesn't mean that you have all the money in the world, or you have all the women in the world, or you have all the influence in the world. A king leaves a legacy. If you look at every story, warriors die. Kings leave a legacy, and they live forever. Like, my father wasn't wealthy, but he was a king. My grandfather wasn't wealthy, but he was a king. Why? Because he left a legacy that's going to live on through generations.
Amen to that. So to all the kings and the prospective kings out there, make sure you tune in with Raul. You stay tuned to the Real Mentors podcast. Keep getting the gems, keep getting the information, and keep striving to be your best self. Thank you so much for coming out today.
Appreciate you.
It was an honor and a pleasure, and I can't wait for this leadership summit this coming October. Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Awesome.